The Alan Watts iPhone app is now available on the iTunes App Store, featuring the entire Alan Watts podcast series at your fingertips. Visit alanwattsapp.com for more information.
Now, the dreaming period is further subdivided into four stages. The first stage is the longest, and it's the best. During that stage, the dream is beautiful. The second stage is not quite so long, and it's a little unsettling. There's an element of instability in it, a certain touch of insecurity. In the third stage, which is not, again, so long, the forces of light and the forces of darkness, of good and of evil, are equally balanced. And things are beginning to look rather dangerous. And in the fourth stage, which is the shortest of them all, the negative, dark, or evil side triumphs and the whole thing blows up in the end. But then that's like the bang in the dream, you know, when you get shot in a dream and you wake up and it was after all a dream. And so then there's a waking period before the whole thing starts again. But you will notice, if you compute, I haven't gone into the mathematics of it, but if you do, you will find out that in this drama, the forces of the dark side are operative for one-third of the time, the forces of the light side for two-thirds of the time. And this is a very ingenious arrangement, because we are seeing here the fundamental principles of drama. Consider drama. Here is a stage, and over the stage here is what we call the proscenium arch. And out there is the audience. Now, you're supposed to be in the world of reality. Let's suppose this isn't a lecture tonight, but a show. And you come outside into the show, and you know you're real people living in the real world, but you're going to see a play, which isn't real. There are actors coming on the stage, but behind the scenes here, they're real people like you. But they, so that you don't see them that way, they're going to put on their costumes and their makeup. And then they're going to come out in front here and pretend to various roles. But you know, you want to be half convinced that what they're doing on the stage is real. And the work of a great actor is to get you sitting on the edge of your chair in anxiety, or weeping, or roaring with laughter, because he's almost persuaded you that what is on the stage is really happening. That is the greatness of his art, to take the audience in. And of course, in the same way, the Hindu feels that the Godhead acts his part so well that he takes himself in completely. So that each one of you is the Godhead wonderfully fooled by your own act. And although you won't admit it to yourself, enjoying it like anything. Because you mustn't admit it. That'd give the show away. Now, it's a funny thing. When you say, I'm a person, the word person is a word from the drama. You know, when you open a play that is the script, you'll see the list of the actors, and it's called dramatis personae, the persons of the drama. And the word person in Latin is persona. That means through sound. Something through which sound comes. Because the persona in Greco-Roman drama was the mask worn by the actors. And because they acted on an open-air stage, the mouth was shaped like a small megaphone, and that would project the sound. So the person is the mask. Isn't it funny now how we've forgotten that? And so Harry Emerson Fosdick could write a book called How to Be a Real Person, which, if translated literally, is How to Be a Genuine Fake. Because in the old sense, you see, the person is the role, the part played by the actor. But if you forget, you see, that you are the actor, and you think you're the person, you've been taken in by your own role. You're enrolled. You're bewitched, spellbound, enchanted. So then, look at something else about the drama and its nature. In the drama, there has to be a villain. Unless, of course, you're acting some kind of a non-play, which doesn't have any story. But all fundamental stories start out with the status quo, where everybody's sort of going along, and then something has to come in to upset everything. And the interest of the play is, how are we going to solve it? It's the same when you play cards. Supposing you're playing solitaire. You start by shuffling the deck, and that introduces chaos. And the game is to play order against chaos. So in the drama, somebody has to be the villain and play the dark side. And then the hero plays against him. If you go to the theater for a good cry, then you let the villain win and you call it a tragedy. If you go for a thrill, you let the hero win. If you go for laughs, you call it a comedy. There are different arrangements then between the hero and the villain. But in all cases, when the curtain goes down at the end of the drama, the hero and the villain step out hand in hand, and the audience applaud both. They don't boo the villain at the end of the play. They applaud him for acting the part of the villain so well. And they applaud the hero for acting the part of the hero so well. Because they know that the hero role and the villain role are only masks. And so you see behind the stage, too, there is the green room, where after the play is over and before it begins, the masks are taken off. And so the Hindus feel that behind the scene, that is to say, in reality, under the surface, you are all the actor. Marvelously skilled in playing many parts and in getting lost in the mazes of your own minds and the entanglements of your own affairs, as if this were the most urgent thing going. But behind the scenes, in the green room, you might say in the very back of your mind, in the very depths of your soul, you always have a very tiny sneaking suspicion that you might not be the you that you think you are. The Germans call it a Hintergedanke, a thought way, way back in your head that you will hardly admit to yourself. Because, of course, you've been brought up, most of you, if you were brought up in the Hebrew Christian tradition, it would be very wicked indeed to think that you were God. That would be blasphemy. And, oh, 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 don't you ever dare think such an idea. Which, of course, is all as it should be. Because the show must go on. Until, of course, the time does come to stop. Now, you will see that this involves two quite different ways of dealing with the fundamental question. Two fundamental questions. One, what is man? That is, who are you? And in the Hebrew Christian answer, we more or less say, well, I'm me. I'm Alan Watts. I'm John Doe. I'm Mary Smith. And I firmly believe I am, because I really oughtn't to think anything else, ought I? And that me is a finite ego, or a finite mind, whatever that is. On the other hand, the Hindu will say that the real self, which he calls Atman, A-T-M-A-N, is what there is. It's the works. It's the which than which there is no witcher. The root and ground of the universe and of reality. The next problem, where they differ so sharply, is, well, why have things gone wrong? Why is there evil? Why is there pain? Why is there tragedy? Now, in the Christian tradition, you have to attribute evil to something else besides God. There, God is defined as good. And he originally created the scheme of things without there being any evil in it. But there was a mysterious accident in which one of the angels, called Lucifer, didn't do what he was told. There was a fall of man. Man disobeyed. He went against the law of God. And from this point, evil was introduced into the scheme of things, and things began to go wrong, that is to say, against the will of the perfectly good Creator. Now, the Hindu thinks in a different way. He feels that the Creator, or the actor, is the author of both the good and the evil. For the reasons that I explained to you, you have to have the evil for there to be a story. And in any case, it isn't as if the Creator had made evil and made someone else its victim. It isn't like saying God creates the evil as well as the good, and poor little us are his puppets and he inflicts evil upon us. The Hindu says nobody experiences pain except the Godhead. You are not some separate little puppet which is being kicked around by omnipotence. You are omnipotence in disguise. And so there is no victim of this. No helpless, defenseless, poor little thing. Even the baby with syphilis is the dreaming Godhead. Now, this makes people brought up in the West extremely uneasy, because it seems to undercut the foundations of moral behavior and say, well, if good and evil are created by God, isn't this a universe in which just anything goes? I mean, if I'm God in disguise, surely if I realize that, I can get away with murder. Well, think it through. Didn't I point out that in the game, as the Hindus analyze it, the evil part has one-third of the time, and the good part has two-thirds? What sort of a game do you want, anyway? You will find out, you see, that all good games, games that are worth playing and that arouse our interest, are constructed like this. If you have the good and the evil equally balanced, the game is boring. Nothing happens. It's stalemate. The irresistible force meets the immovable object. On the other hand, if it's all good, and there's hardly any evil, maybe just a weedy little bit of life, the force is
You've been listening to Alan Watts from the Spoken Word Library of the Electronic University. For copies of this and other Alan Watts programs, please go to alanwatts.com on the World Wide Web or call us toll-free at 1-800-WO-WATTS. That's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS. The Watts website features free audio downloads, program lists, and information on Watts' life and works. Once again, that's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS.
On the other hand, if it's all good, and there's hardly any evil, or maybe just a weeny little bit of a fly in the ointment,